Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we're exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series. This is Jack.
And I'm Amy. This is part two of this week's episode.
The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion, shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, after all this goes down, Hunt goes home and Bryce is really, really, really terrified for him. And, you know, that's another thing that makes it different from Danica's encounter with Rune, because Bryce never learned about the Danica and Rune encounter until much later, whereas Bryce knows exactly what Hunt is doing and knows that he's put himself in a really dangerous position. That's going to bite him in the ass, dumbass.
You're muttering to yourself as if you're not being recorded.
Right, exactly.
Bite him in the ass, dumbass.
And it's the next morning where Bryce wakes up and decides, you know what? I'm going to get my leg fixed. And what is it that makes Bryce think this? Do we believe this change? And I'm going to argue yes. Bryce has been beaten up over the last few days of all the information Danica withheld from her.
Mm-hmm.
She has been beat up by other individuals who've used Danica's memory against her.
Yep.
I think it was Hunt's willingness to be hurt at her level and to mm-hmm. cause hurt for her that made her realize, you know what, this pain is no longer worth it. The emotional pain I am going through is not worth risking Hunt's life.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not putting blame on Bryce in any way, shape, or form. It's her friend's birthday.
Right.
She's grieving. Right. She got this really upsetting message. 100%. Like, there's no shame to Bryce. I'm sure there's that moment of, like, had I not reacted this way,
mm-hmm.
Hunt wouldn't have reacted this way.
Right.
Because it was a very visceral reaction for her. She's right. described as having her hands shaking, not being able to speak. It's almost like because of how, and it wasn't just that moment. It was the whole day. Like, Hunt realizing that Bryce was upset the entire day because of this, you know, Danica's birthday. Yeah. And I'm sure she thought, hey, if I was able to just kind of like grieve through it versus sitting in the grief, and there is a difference in that, and it's okay to do both.
Yeah.
But it would have changed things.
Yeah, I agree. I think what we're seeing is a recognition that if I had moved through the grief already, or was further along moving
through
the grief,
or be willing to talk to him at the start of the day.
Right. Right. It would have been different.
Yeah.
Exactly. I also wonder if Bryce thinks that by healing herself, she can somehow heal them both since they are emotional twins.
Ooh, didn't think about that. I like it.
I love that we get to see Bryce in the same Medi-Witch office in chapter 61 that Rune once was in. And I think it kind of just juxtapositions their experiences because the room is still white.
Mm-hmm.
It is white. That hasn't changed since Rune visited, but I think the meaning is slightly different. Although, do I remember what we said about Rune in the white room? I don't. Oh, it made him feel out of place.
Yeah.
Whereas now, it's kind of a symbol of healing for Bryce and for a fresh start.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not that's true, I don't know. But at least the venom gets extracted.
Woo!
I do find it hilarious that Hypaxia mistakes Hunt as Bryce's partner and it makes that assumption. However, it does almost give Hunt permission for the interactions they're going to have in the clinic room.
Yep.
Throughout the scene, we get some pretty stunning truths, both from Bryce and Hunt. Truths that have been grounded since the night of Danica's death and the night they both met for the first time. And of course, you know, Hunt's reveals are way bigger because they're new to us.
Yeah.
What we learn is Bryce has had pain since day one of the injury.
Mm-hmm.
And Bryce learns for the first time Hunt was the one to do the stapling.
Yep.
Caused the permanent pain.
Yep.
Asshole. And I'll get to the rest of it in a second.
Oh, fun times. Bryce chooses to live with the pain before, right? Like, mm-hmm. she's like, I'm going to live with this because I feel sad.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to choose to live with the pain for the removal.
Yeah.
Because, of course, right? Yeah. And no, by God, I love you, Amy. In no world. Numb me up.
I wouldn't expect that from you.
No. I would remember me and I'd remember you in different ways. Like, not in pain.
Yeah.
Remember me and sushi.
Yes.
But it's a mirror for what's about to happen. Also with Hunt. The mirroring that we're seeing is a little bit different. Like, I think you have to still look for it. Like, they're mirrored, but just different.
Yeah.
So Hunt and his wings are about to get cut off. He's about to be brutalized. Her leg is chopped open. She's being brutalized. What's the difference? Hunt doesn't get a choice on whether he gets to feel the pain of his wings. Bryce 100% gets a choice mm-hmm. on whether or not to feel the pain that she's experiencing. It's a dumb choice, but this is her way of saying goodbye because keeping them there was to hurt, and so letting them, quote unquote, go is going to have to be extra painful. Like, even like the final thing of like, no, I will not have any pain to medication. We're not going to do this. Also, don't even have time for a curtain. I want to see it. It's just so unnecessary. And that's because Bryce is punishing herself for even getting it removed, right? Like, she'll never have this pain again. So might as well go out with a bang.
Yeah, she definitely... Just like, it's, if I'm going to really, truly move on from Danica, I'm going to make it as painful as possible so that I don't go backwards and commemorate it with more pain. I don't know.
No.
What is interesting in this is the venom has literally taken on life. It mm-hmm. has now become an organism that, quote, feeds off you. It's become a symbol of Bryce's self-punishment and her relationship with her memories of her friends. And so, of course, to remove that symbol must be painful because it's only ever caused her pain. Quote, every time you run or walk too long, it creeps into the surrounding area and hurts you. That's just a metaphor for how the memories have been treating her.
Yes.
All her memories of her friends just creep into the surrounding area and hurts her.
Mm-hmm.
And the venom itself is described as dark forked lightning along her femur, which I felt like, why would you call it? I understand why you would describe it as lightning because of the visual, but you could also describe it as veins. So why would it be called lightning, Jack? She's looking at me with shock.
Massive spoilers for book 3, because Hunt is a prince of hell.
Oh, I wasn't even thinking that.
But and this is a product of hell.
It is a product of hell.
It's a Crystallith demon, and Hunt is a prince of hell. That's technically one of his beings.
I mean, he's a product of hell.
He's a his daddy is a prince of hell.
Yes.
Both of them. We don't know who, but both of them. And in theory, if this other thing is a product that was created, they're brothers.
Oh my gosh. Okay, that was not where I was going.
I'm just saying, I think it's a hint that Hunt is darkness.
What I was going to say is that it's dark forked lightning that's going to get removed so she can replace it with other lightning that will make her powerful.
That too. I think both of us have solid options. One have daddy brother issues. One makes sense. You decide.
The process of removing the venom is symbolic of Bryce's journey thus far with trying to heal. And I think what that symbolism is that, you know, Bryce is choosing the most painful option possible to extract this venom, just like her choice to be involved in the investigation into Danica's murder mm-hmm. keeps causing her pain because she keeps uncovering truths about Danica that are harming her. But you know who's there? Hunt. And he's there to ground her the whole time.
Aww.
Hunt's revelations about what his thoughts when he first met Bryce tell me Hunt knew from the beginning that Bryce was capable of being his equal in loyalty before he really truly knew her.
Mm-hmm.
He tells her that when he first saw her in the alley, he thought, quote, "There's someone I want guarding my back. There's a friend I'd like to have. I think I gave you such a hard time when we met up again because some part of me knew that and was afraid of what it mean."
It's such a sweet moment, too. Mm-hmm. Like, this whole thing is very sweet. And the whole setup, right? Bryce going through pain. He's like, they're comforting her. They're sometimes like, they're out, you know, forehead to forehead. He's calling her sweetheart. It reminds me of labor and childbirth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's like helping her, coaching her through it. And the whole thing is, like I said, very reminiscent of labor and the support that's needed to go through the worst kind of pain. I think that it's meant to show that, like, the something that's between them is born there. Because later on, Hunt will reflect that, like, a line's been crossed. There's no going back.
Yeah.
And what's been formed? Oh, maybe this. The fact that he kind of lightly kisses her. And then this happens. Quote, "A star bloomed inside of her at that kiss. A long slumbering light began to fill her chest, her veins. Her power. It's born. It's being reborn. It's coming back to life." Mm-hmm. There, this is a scene of rebirth.
Yeah.
In many ways.
Yeah.
I'm even wondering if this, like, dark worm thing that's been, quote unquote, feeding off of her was literally feeding off of the light.
Oh, maybe.
Right?
Oh, it's, yeah, no, that's a great point, because Bryce has said, "A light inside of me went out when Danica died."
Yep.
Oh, it makes total sense that she couldn't access it because the venom, which nullifies power, was literally inside her. Oh, yeah, my God. Yeah, the whole time.
Listeners are like, yeah, no fuck, man. We're over here be like, whoa.
I never put two and two together, dumbass.
Hey.
I'm talking to me. I'm talking to myself.
Those listeners who also didn't get it.
We can be a club.
The listener gets to know what it feels like when you group me into the dumbass category with you. But it is a beautiful scene. It's great. Honestly, the sweetest, lightest, like, she describes the kiss as like barely a brushing of lips.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sad that we get a sex scene, but I will miss these moments. That's the thing about, like, you know, the Pride and Prejudice effect, right? The Darcy clenching his hands. Like,
I'm brushed always, hands.
Yeah. Like, I get not sad that they get together, but it's just like, oh, we're not going to have these sweet little moments like that.
Yeah. Because sometimes they are more powerful.
Yeah, they are. Like, look, I'm all for her getting her rocks off his stumpy wings and stuff.
Oh my gosh.
But I'm also, you know, like, it's like whenever... It's like when Luke and Lorelai finally got together in Gilmore Girls. This means nothing to you. You didn't watch Gilmore Girls.
I didn't.
But it's like when characters finally get together, you're kind of like, oh, I liked the angst.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, the angst is what makes the journey so good.
Yeah.
It's not less satisfying when the journey's over.
Yeah. Yep.
Bryce and Hunt are forced to go to Micah's office after Bryce's venom removal at the start of chapter 62. And as they go to Micah's office, we have to remember that Bryce is literally at her weakest since the start of the novel. Physically, at least. Bryce and Hunt have established that they are a team. However, Bryce is in no shape to protect him from what's about to happen. And I do wonder if things could have been different had she not just had the venom removed.
Yep.
Would she have put up more of a fight?
Mm-hmm.
Hunt, however, seems like he's ready for a fight. Quote, "Hunt's temper became a living, deadly thing. His lightning pushed against his skin, coiling through him, a cobra ready to strike." And I found this image ironic because you know how you kill a snake?
You cut it.
You cut off its head.
That one.
Ew. And he's about to be given the living death where he's getting his wings cut off. And to me, that's a parallel.
Snakes are so gross. That's my takeaway.
I think they're pretty.
I know you do. I know you do. And this is something that I have to live with. I want to keep in mind that Hunt basically knew all this was going to go down. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying he knew that it would be the living death, but he knew a punishment was about to happen.
Yeah.
And he knows he can't attack Amelie. But he did it anyway. Mm-hmm. And he has zero regard for himself and his own safety. And I'm happy that Bryce suffers in front of him because maybe he can learn from his actions, because That's really fucked up. Also, there's no note on this, but I just love Amelie's regret in being like, I don't want to press charges. Stop it. I didn't rat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes her seem like a child.
It does. Yeah.
Who got her sibling in trouble with her parents and then
the sibling got his wing chopped off.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
As the whole scene plays out and Micah prepares to cut off Hunt's wings, I noticed in the description that Micah has a double-edged sword. I don't think we needed that description, right? You could have just said sword. So yeah. Why double-edged? I think that was really, really intentional on SJM's part because Micah himself is like a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. He is both coming across as the good guy.
Yeah.
But he's really the antagonist. Like, and I just thought it was a really good visual representation of who Micah is as a character.
Completely. Even Rune was like, he got off light.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Now, a lot of plot happens and has been happening for a while. Hunt gets his wings cut off. Bryce yells at Sabine. It's revealed Bryce gave up her place in the bone quarter for Danica. And then they go back so Bryce and Hunt can rest. But Jack wants to say something before I steamroll forward.
It just this one moment, and this is me having gripes with SJM. I'll even say it. Quick book 3 spoiler. Not this quote, but you my notes. Jet lag. Sabine says of her daughter, quote, she was a coward and died like one and deserved to be dumped into the river. And now she is left with eons of shame because of you, because she should not be there, you stupid whore. And now she must suffer for it. So this is the book 3 spoiler. I don't know. I constantly am like, Sabine, were you always completely evil? Yeah. And then the end of that quote, I'm like, no, I don't know. It's just my gripe where I'm like, SJM, I need you to sit down with me and tell me the truth.
Yeah. I wonder, as I've thought about it, because the same can be said of the Autumn King.
Yep.
With Bryce and love, the capacity to love someone does not redeem you from your evil actions.
Mm-mm.
And I think that is very true to me for Sabine.
Yeah.
Because she's just a terrible person. I don't care if all she cares about is whether or not Danica shamed herself.
Yes.
And whether or not Danica shamed Sabine as her mother.
Sabine, I can believe more that she's evil.
Yeah.
In the end. I don't struggle with that as much as I did with the Autumn King.
That's fair. Yeah. At home, Bryce recalls the conversation she had with the Under King in order to give up her spot in the Bone Quarter. And again, SJM is so consistent. We see the use of 7 as a number for power, and it gets called out directly again. Quote, then say it again, Bryce Quinlan, and let the trade be done. Say it a 7th and final time, and let the gods and the dead and all those between hear your vow. Say it, and it shall be done. By the way, I refuse to believe Jessupa didn't notice that Bryce had stolen the death mark.
Oh, absolutely.
Bryce makes Jessupa seem so disconnected and uncaring, and I just think Jessupa knows and is letting Bryce do her thing.
Yeah, okay. Book 3 and multiverse spoilers really, really fast. Skip ahead. Jessupa's over 15,000 years old. She was there at the original crossing.
Yeah.
The Under King is a product of Throne of Glass world because they describe the exact same thing in Throne of Glass.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, don't ask me what book. This is off of TikTok I saw. Don't ask me what the TikTok was I saw. But I can find it later. And Rowan is the one who said, oh, look out for these types of creatures in the mountains. They look like this, and he describes with the same way the Under King looks like, and they sit on their pile of fortune. What does the Under King get? Coins. They're easy to destroy. I think Jessupa never took the Under King seriously because we find out that this whole Under King lying about things and like that the souls don't actually go to where they are.
Yeah.
Is another lie, and they do, yeah, they are,
yeah,
saved.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was a lie upon a lie.
Yeah.
And I think Jessupa just like doesn't take it too seriously, where it's like, what, you sold your soul? Doesn't mean anything.
Right. That's fair. That's fair.
And they're also weak.
Later on in the chapter, many hours after being tended to by Bryce, Hunt wakes up in the middle of the night and we get his perspective. And I think we see some foreshadowing here. Quote, if he were wise, he'd find somehow to pull away before this thing between them met its inevitable, horrible end. as all things in the Republic met a horrible end. And it just makes me mad because it's Hunt's own fault.
It's your own fault. It's your own mate. It's so obvious. Stop being a dick. I mean, just things like this quote, a scent like paradise filled his nose, settled him, soothed the pain.
Yeah, I have that in the breadcrumbs.
I'm going to bring it here.
No, it's fine. I have more to it than just that. So
yeah, okay. Just like, maybe you shouldn't betray. Just saying.
Maybe you should think twice.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 63 opens up on the day after Hunt's mutilation, and Bryce has to be at the gallery. Hunt's trauma, I think, in my own mind, is a turning point for Bryce.
Absolutely.
His ordeal has, in some ways, replaced the trauma of Danica's death in Bryce's mind. So it's like, what is the greater trauma? The trauma that is closest to you, mm-hmm. in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so the mental blocks and physical manifestation of Danica's death and that trauma it inflicted on Bryce are gone because it's been removed by the trauma Hunt has had and that Bryce witnessed. That manifests in the fact that Bryce no longer has pain in her leg because, A, she removed the venom. But also, if you remember back to the start of part two, Bryce couldn't fill out job applications. And now she's filling them out. She's submitting them. She's not holding back. She's ready to get out of this space where a lot of memories for Danica were held.
Everything about Bryce right now is reminding me of Ember, her mom.
Mm-hmm.
Because she is like, okay, time for me to get my shit together.
Yeah.
Time for me to do what I gotta do. And, you know, we had that story of Ember experiencing trauma and hiding in the temple and then fighting in order to keep her daughter safe.
Mm-hmm.
So there was the same thing of trauma, needing time, and then being like, all right, time for me to fight. And that's what we're seeing here. And those values is what Bryce is calling upon at this moment. And honestly, I think you can say that like Danica's death broke Bryce, mm-hmm. versus Hunt's living death inspired her.
Mm. Good point.
Yep.
So I want to go back to something I alluded to earlier in the episode and note how Justinian has been absent from the narrative for a very, very long time. So at one point, Bryce thinks about how she doesn't want to see any of the legionaries and she names a few of them. She doesn't name, mm-hmm. Justinian. In fact, I don't think she's ever interacted with Justinian.
Mm-hmm.
He's watched her once, maybe while, but I think it was from the top of the gallery, not from across from her apartment.
Yep.
So she doesn't even really know he exists, and he's definitely kept out of the way. And SJM definitely hasn't brought him up,
mm-hmm.
since for a while.
Yep. It's suspicious.
It is suspicious. What we see also in this chapter is that Bryce is willing to demonstrate her ability to trust Rune, even though she's not willing to be vulnerable with Rune, which is an important progression for their relationship. But even though Rune wants more from her right now,
it's sweet.
It's sweet, and she's just not capable of giving it yet.
No.
But she'll get there.
You're my sister.
Mm. I want to fuck.
What? What?
I said I want to fuck.
No, I heard. And I repeat, what?
No, I'm just
Bryce
joking.
And Rune. Yeah, no, I get it. I'm here now. I just was ready to get into this really sweet note that you're about to say. I wasn't ready, but I'm here now.
Okay. Bryce finally, at the end of this chapter, figures out Danica's password to her Redner Industries account and discovers Danica hid a folder in a folder with a clue for her. And the last few times that I've read this book, I thought that was just silly that, like, what, you mean Bryce figures out that Danica did the same thing that Bryce did? That seems like a cop-out. And then I remembered that Jack and I are half-brains and we do the same thing constantly without consulting each other, so I guess it makes sense.
I say this with full confidence and with every bone in my body that we would do a better job at leaving clues.
Oh, 100%.
I've thought about this morning. In my laying in bed with pure jet lagness, I was like, okay, here's what I would do. I would hide it in the reputation hat,
mm-hmm.
that I got you for Christmas, mm-hmm. which would replace your other one. Mm-hmm. And in order to get you to figure it out sooner and not 2 freaking years later, I would have cleared out my phone of all Taylor Swift music except the Reputation album.
Wow. And I would, that would be a clue.
Literally that night.
That would be a clue.
Because Bryce probably went through her phone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just saying we're better at this.
But I would have to know to look through your music library.
I would like to imagine you'd miss me.
Fair.
And you'd go through my phone.
Maybe. I feel like I would give it to your mom. Phone?
All right, let's agree now.
I keep your phone.
You never give that to my mom. We got to go through. We got to talk. That is not something you give to her.
Oh. We have returned to Hunt's point of view in chapter 64, and this is just after Bryce has watched the Redner Industries videos on Danica's flash drive. And again, reminder, this is only 24 hours after Hunt's punishment where he's had his wings cut off. Unlike right before Hunt attacked Amelie, Hunt's point of view is now very morbid. He did just experience the living death for a second time in his life, so it makes sense. Quote, her face was white as death, so ashen that her freckles stood out like splattered blood. It's a far cry from the sun gilded the clouds. I just when have you ever heard freckles being compared to blood?
Like blood.
It's very morbid. Also, and I don't know if this is significant, it did occur to me that when Bryce walks in, Hunt sees that she's wearing a black dress, and I don't think Bryce has worn a black dress since the night she met Tertian.
Yeah, I think it's totally representative. We know Bryce uses makeup and clothes to express how she's feeling, and I think that it's meant to express her grieving Hunt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I love it.
I have my own breadcrumb.
Love it.
That we're not discussing in breadcrumbs, and that is the video itself that Hunt and Bryce view, and it's a human who rips apart a bunch of veneers and then she rips herself apart, and that's literally how Danica dies. She rips apart the pack of devils and then herself, and it's kind of eerie when you think about Danica watching this video, because that's who recorded it, and then just not knowing that she was watching the way she'd die,
which is
sad.
Really sad.
Yeah.
A different set of breadcrumbs, and this set of breadcrumbs is focused again on Hunt's betrayal. After Hunt and Bryce watch the videos that shows what happens to people when they're subjected to synth, quote, Hunt considered his next words carefully, fighting against his racing mind. We need to go slow on the synth, Hunt. Make sure we're certain this time, and be careful. Now, this is a reasonable thing for Hunt to suggest. But if he also knows what's about to go down with Justinian and Victoria, it adds another layer. Later on in the conversation, when Bryce is trying to argue with Hunt about the synth, Hunt thinks, quote, and because she was opening her mouth to object again, he said what he knew would stop her. Bryce, if we pursue this and we're wrong, I might not walk away from Micah's next punishment.
That hurt.
That really, really hurts when you know...
He's emotionally gaslighting her.
Yeah.
Hunt, sorry, I didn't mean to cut your thoughts off.
I'm just really upset with him. Like, yeah. He is using his own pain and trauma and possible death as a weapon against Bryce to keep her away from synth. And I recognize he's trying to keep her safe. Mm-hmm. He's not trying to implicate her in what's happening.
And he's also not wrong.
But he's not giving her the whole truth.
Yes.
And I think it also hurts because, again, if they are emotional twins, Hunt knows he can hurt her this way because he knows Bryce would feel this, you know, it would be the same if the roles were reversed.
Mm-hmm.
Hunt thinks, quote, it changed everything. Everything. He didn't even know where to begin sorting out all he'd seen. He should make some phone calls. Needed to make some phone calls about this. And that's... like the biggest fucking clue on the planet that I ignored.
Right.
I never paid attention to that.
I mean, I would appreciate more clues earlier in the book, yeah, but leading up to it, at least we're getting a bunch of clues.
Right.
We finally get the first true sexual interaction between Bryce and Hunt. And it, of course, would be when Hunt is the most vulnerable physically and when Bryce is being the most vulnerable emotionally. And I think they needed to be on that level to make that final jump.
Yep. It's really convenient when he's trying to distract her from Synth.
But Bryce is the one who brings it up, though.
I know.
I think this one was a pure moment. But okay. You're not, I mean, it's helpful. It's helpful, but it was pure. But it's helpful. Damn it. Hunt is the one, and this is the part where it's like, yeah, it's helpful, but because Hunt is the one who pleasures Bryce first, as yeah. it should be.
Yeah.
But he does do it in pain. It's a need for Hunt to pleasure Bryce. It's a moment of power when he has none, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. he has lost his wings. I'm sure there's some kind of association with wings and manhood too. You know what I mean? Where it's like, I must be the one to get you off.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
It's
he's overcompensating.
I think so. I mean, he's doing it right.
I mean, and he's always been he always is a generous lover. However,
yes. However, I think it extra is, you know, if you think about it, like she's taken care of him twice.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he needs to be the one to pleasure her.
Yeah.
For many reasons. And then, you know, like they go at it to the point of him re-injuring himself.
Yeah.
How is she not on her period? I don't know. It's like, I'm all for it. Go ahead. Just like lay a towel down.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Having,
for both of them. They're both bleeding.
Right? I want patches of blood in different parts.
As Jack said, the physical exchange between Bryce and Hunt comes with its own set of power dynamics. It also comes with its own type of violence because violence is a form of love. Right now, Bryce has not fully cleansed herself of that. Their actions are described as erupted, unleashed, savage, unrelenting, ravaged. Like, yeah, it's hot, but it's also intentionally extremely physically violent.
Yep. After the Meta Witch leaves and Hunt hilariously is like, so when can we fuck? I notice Bryce puts Hunt into bed
mm-hmm.
and then into his bed
mm-hmm.
and Hunt doesn't protest.
Yep.
They have been cuddling little fools
yep.
as of late. And you're telling me that they're not going to
cuddle
and one's not going to be like, no, don't leave. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
It's funny when you think about the fact that they're both sneaking out.
Yes, which brings me to my last section of breadcrumbs before we move on to more breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
After the Meta Witch leaves and Bryce puts him to bed, quote, he answered a few messages on his phone and was asleep before Bryce had shut off the lights. How much you want to bet he was faking sleeping?
I get no, none now, apparently. I'm on board.
Because when Bryce wakes up in the middle of the night, quote, Hunt's door was shut, his room dark beyond it. He didn't so much as come to investigate as she slipped out of the apartment. Probably because he's already left. It is 3 in the morning. Oh my God,
I didn't even think about it. He's not there.
He's not there.
These bitches need to find a friend.
Yeah, that's true. Also, let's talk about this irony. When Therian calls Bryce to tell her that a synth deal is going down at the river, the white opal Hunt gave Bryce is there the whole time, making its presence known. It mocks us, and it mocks Bryce.
Yep.
Quote, Bryce was halfway home when her phone buzzed. She pulled it from her hastily repaired jacket, the white opal in the pocket, clinking against the screen. She clenched the white opal in her fists and wrote back.
Mm-hmm.
That white opal that represents their joy, their trust, is about to shatter.
Yep.
And it's tragic, that's for next week.
I love, oh. Hopefully I'll be over this PMSing next week because I think I will cry. Let's get into some non-multiverse breadcrumbs. In chapter 57, as Hunt and Bryce watch TV in her room, quote, all of it felt only natural. He let himself settle into the feeling. And wasn't that the most dangerous thing he'd ever done? Foreboding, foreshadowing, betrayal, mates, all of it.
All of it. In chapter 60, Lahaba talks about how the Nox wants to kill her. Quote, he knows that if I'm submerged in water, I'm dead in a heartbeat. You know, SJM casually placing that there so we know it too.
I mean, that whole entire thing of like, if I just open this patch and put my hand right here, and if he were to drag me under, I'm screwed. Yeah, it was
it was very heavy-handed.
Yeah, but you don't know it.
Yeah.
Until later.
Yeah.
Also in chapter 60, Bryce says of Hunt, Athy is a slave with little left to lose. And then Lahabek says, "Don't say such things, Bibi. There's always something to lose." Foreshadowing.
Like wings, like your trust,
like your telephone. Because he, like, you know, just all of it. It's sad.
In chapter 61, Hypaxia tells Bryce and Hunt, "You two have such a powerful bond." Because they're mates.
In chapter 61, Hunt says to Hypaxia about his halo, "Want to take it off for me?" And she will, but not before she's like, "Would you kill them?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "Kinda." Yeah, and she's like, "All right."
In chapter 62, Hunt thinks, quote, "That too brief kiss he'd given her had said enough. So had the light he could have sworn glowed in her eyes as he pulled away. Either a sign that she's starborn, that they're mates, or that both.
Or that his lightning gives her light power thingies."
Yeah, maybe.
Yep. In chapter 62, Bryce thinks about the death mark she stole from Jessica's collection. Quote, "A coin of pure iron from an ancient long gone kingdom across the sea. Passage of a mortal on a boat." Jessica herself.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Last one in chapter 62, when Hunt wakes up in the middle of the night after his wings are cut off and he's in Bryce's bed, quote, "A scent like paradise filled his nose and settled him, soothed the pain." Hunt then pulls Bryce to him and thinks something deep in him shifted and settled. And when he wonders if he should pull away from her, yet Hunt couldn't bring himself to remove his arm to avoid the instinct to breathe in her scent and listen to her soft breathing. Like, mate coded everywhere.
Yep. In chapter 64, it'd be another day or two before he could walk without pain, another several weeks until his wings grew back, a few days after that until he could test out flying, meaning he won't be able to fly at all when shit finally hits the fan.
Finally. In chapter 64, Hunt, quote, "remembered every miserable second from the first time he'd had his wings cut off. All the surviving fallen had endured it, along with the insult of having their wings displayed in the Crystal Palace of the Asteri as trophies and warnings," which will be convenient someday.
Yep. And for our last breadcrumb in chapter 64, while Hunt is fighting, isn't fingering such a weird word?
It is.
I want it's a so better
cringy.
It is. Like, I don't know. It just makes me think of fingernails, and that hurts. Uh-huh. And I'm like, ow. Anyway, while he is fingering Bryce and she climaxes, quote, "she swallowed the sound with an open mouth kiss as every nerve in her body exploded into glorious starlight," because she's starborn and that shit happens all the time. In this world, because they're mates. Everything. Yeah. And because they're mates. We don't have any multiverse this other than what I talked about earlier.
Right. So what's our Bryce-ism, Jack?
Oh, that's a great question.
I don't even have one.
Oh, boy. Because I'm not really. Okay. You know what? I do have one. It's never too late to start.
Yeah.
Because that's what she does.
Yeah.
She made a choice. She woke up one day and was like, you know what? Everything hurts.
Yeah.
Hunt is hurt.
Yeah.
I'm going to send out those resumes.
Yeah.
So Bryce-ism of the week. Hey, everyone, this is your note. If you're wondering, should I get a new job? This is your sign. Go send out those resumes.
I like what you're saying. Bryce over and over again could have been like, you know what? I could have moved on, but I've missed my window.
Yep.
I've missed that opportunity. But no, there is always opportunity, and you just need to take it.
Yep.
So going back to our question from the start of the episode.
Please remind me, because I blacked out when you asked it.
Totally fine. Does SJM do the work necessary for us to believe the plot twist that we know will be coming with Hunt's betrayal?
No. Until the final end. I can say this with full confidence. No. Look, SJM does a fantastic job in these chapters alluding to it.
Yeah.
I think the evidence is really clear. I think she nails it right on the head of just all these little tiny hints that he's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Too little, too late for me. Not too little, too late. That was really dramatic of me. But I think there could have been more clues a little bit ahead.
Yeah, I agree. There wasn't enough of obvious I guess it's not about being obvious, but I had no idea Justinian and Hunt. I mean, we have no idea Justinian and Hunt are interacting in this set of chapters. when I go digging for them, I can see the clues. And I guess, you know, I don't want her to be heavy-handed so that I see the clues coming from a mile away. But I just needed something more.
And
I'm glad I was able to find as many breadcrumbs as there was this time around.
Yes.
Because I have not seen them prior to this.
Yes. But I want to know, like, when was the day that they chose this?
Right.
Like, I have no idea this how long it's been in the works.
Right. Right.
Is this, like, is Hunt freaking out and now getting, like, extra, like, look over here, don't go over there, because he knows the deals that, like, the deal is about to go down?
Yeah.
Or did he just now decide this? And right. This is him acting strange. If there is an answer to that, I want to have been able to catch that moment early on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to have been able to be like, something fishy is going on, but I can't figure out what.
Or like later on in my third read, be like, ah, there's that clue.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, it was so obvious and I missed it.
Right.
I don't think these were obvious.
No, no. I mean, it's just obvious that he's, again, really last minute trying to shift her attention.
Yeah.
Once you read it again. And again, that's the whole point of a reread is once you reread it, it's very heavy handed.
Right.
First time you read it, it's not heavy handed at all.
Right.
And that's the same way that I would have liked a clue prior. I just want to know what was the day that Hunt made this decision? Because mm-hmm. He's been very clear that he would kill them. He's made it really clear that he would, like at the first opportunity, he would fight back.
Yeah.
I just need to know what day that was.
Yeah. When did he get looped in?
Mm-hmm. Well, that wasn't too much of a discussion.
No, it wasn't.
You know, I think there hasn't been much to criticize SJM on this. And I don't want to say this is a criticism because I don't want to pretend like you and I have done a perfect analysis and that we absolutely, there's no chance we'd missed it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And maybe SJM does have that.
Right. And it's not like I could have done any better. Like, this is a really, mm-hmm. really difficult line that she's walking.
Yeah.
To have the plot twist come from someone whose point of view you're in regularly is not easy.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's, I can't say that she did it. I can't say that I could have done it better. But, I have ideas, but that doesn't mean I would have executed it better.
For a book that I feel like she executes almost everything
so well.
So well. I really want to be in her brain because I know, I really hope that there's something that I just missed.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And that's where I hope our listeners just send us a lovely email and be like, you fools, it was here.
Here's where it is.
Yep. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. Next week, we'll be exploring chapters 65 through 72 of A House of Earth and Blood.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our form at booktalkforbooktalk.com for a chance to have your feedback discussed during a future mini episode.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo. You can also follow us on TikTok or Instagram at the handle booktalkforbooktalk. Bye.
Sorry, I wasn't looking at you.
Not our best bye.
Do you want to try again?
No. This is our fate.
But I keep hitting this damn microphone.
With your butt?
Oh, just now with my butt, but other times with my hands.
Okay.
I am not wearing a bra, so you can see my nipples and my piercing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Let me see.
I mean, maybe you can. Maybe
you can. I can't see. God,
it's got double layers.
Wear a white shirt for me next time.
I mean, if you want to see them, I'll just show you my boobs.
Oh, okay.
Not this moment.
Oh.